I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Academy Awards are this Sunday night, the 2nd of March, 2014. And as we move closer to the biggest awards night of the year, a look now at the films nominated, the films not nominated, and what to expect on Oscar night with two writers from the Georgia Strait. Adrian Mack is the movies editor at the Georgia Strait, as well writes on various subjects, including music and fascist death cults. Craig Takeuchi is a staff writer at The Strait and was its movies editor from 2004 to 2011. We'll talk about the films that are locks to win, what categories are competitive, as well as what we might see Sunday night with host Ellen DeGeneres. On Twitter, Craig's handle is @CineCraig, and Adrian's is @AdrianMack. The website for The Strait is at strait.com. Please welcome to the Plant Online program Adrian Mack and Craig Takeuchi. Mr. Takeuchi, good morning.
Good morning. Hi there.
And Mr. Mack, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
So, oh, it's nice to be here.
Is Oscar night a big deal for you guys? I mean, what do you guys do on a Sunday night?
On a Sunday night, normally, this is Adrian speaking, yes. I would be taking care of my children. But we are going to all settle down in the living room and enjoy the spectacle. And I will be live tweeting and probably making snarky blog posts at straight.com about what we see.
And what's it like for you, Craig?
I usually watch it with a bunch of friends. I have a few friends who usually dress up black tie and everything.
Yeah, that's one of the things about award shows now, and not even award shows, but TV shows even. The snarking on Twitter and the sort. I mean, that's what makes it fun, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, the Oscars would be the Oscars if you didn't disagree at length with their decisions.
Exactly.
I think.
Yeah, and I guess there are two events in the city on Sunday night where you can watch the Oscars. I guess the Rio has an event, and then the Van City Theater as well, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can get drinks at both, it should be noted.
Yeah. That's the best part, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You can also get drinks at my house, in case anyone's interested.
In terms of what's nominated, I guess to go to the beginning, I mean, what's not nominated is also an interesting to talk about, and we'll touch on that in a sec. But for Best Pictures, is 12 Years a Slave, is that a lock, Craig?
Well, it's hard to say. Right now, it seems like the race is between Gravity and 12 Years a Slave. 12 Years a Slave did win the Golden Globe, but a lot of the critics are predicting Gravity will win, and part of the reason is 12 Years a Slave, the content was quite intense. It's a hard movie to watch. Gravity is more sort of the politically neutral film. But I think Adrian has a point about the fact that science fiction films usually don't win.
Yeah, that's assuming that we think Gravity is a science fiction film. It is set in space, and it is a, you know, I would call it a nuts and bolts science fiction film in the sense that it is about how one survives or not, as the case may be, in space. Oscar does not love science fiction or horror. It doesn't really go for genre movies. But Gravity does walk the line. It's not, is it science fiction, you know, or is it just an adventure movie? Is it really just Castaway in orbit? It's a question in my mind. Will it be recognized in spite of its genre? Or does it even really, you know, exist in that genre? But, you know, looking at the list of best pictures, it does. I don't know what could displace it. I think Craig's right. I think 12 Years a Slave is probably too intense. I don't think Oscar likes to depress people.
So you predict Gravity, Adrian?
Jeez. Sure. Yes. I'm going to go with Gravity. I think Craig might be right with that.
Is that the case usually, that the films that win the most Oscars wins Best Picture? Because I was filling out my predictions on Facebook last night, and it seemed like Gravity is getting a lot of the technical stuff, and I think I added it up, and I have it at like 6 Oscars, so I'm assuming that that's going to be Best Picture, is it?
Well, I think normally they actually give the technical awards to the film that doesn't get the Best Picture award. I think that would be more the case, except in this case, Gravity's different, because Gravity really is a truly extraordinary accomplishment. Not just, in terms of marrying what they've done technically with the director's vision, it's in its own way, it's a work of art. It's a really strong piece of filmmaking. I didn't necessarily like it, I would like to point out, but but it's kind of a cut above in terms of advancing the art of cinema, I think. Greg?
I guess the other thing is that in the past few years, a lot of historical films have won Best Picture, and they've beaten out films that weren't. So 12 Years a Slave does have that going for it, I think.
Craig, you mentioned something about 12 Years a Slave and its content, as well as the content in Dallas Buyers Club. Do you think that because it's both films are difficult to watch. I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave, but I did see Dallas Buyers Club this week. Do you think that turns off Academy members?
It can potentially. In terms of Oscar politics, it's unpredictable. It's a film that a lot of people have been saying that it's really good, but it's hard to take. So because of that, they may gravitate. Sorry, yeah. That's a bad word to use.
They may gravitate to gravity.
considering the competition. And I think American Hustle could be a possible runner-up.
Yeah, of the films that I saw, I enjoyed that the most, and if I were voting, I'd probably vote for that for Best Picture.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's pretty open field this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also, not that it's totally relevant, but I noticed that this year we don't have any, well, maybe Captain Phillips would fall into this category, but you don't have a Zero Dark Thirty and an Argo, which really, really sort of last year really dominated before, you know, Argo won the Best Picture Award. Both of those films were, to my mind anyway, really quite prominent in everyone's minds, and I found that strange, just politically.
Yeah.
This year, no, you don't get that, which is kind of interesting to me.
You bring up a good point about the politics of Oscar voting and the sort. My observation from last year's race was that Argo would not have won Best Picture had Ben Affleck been nominated for Best Director. Is that the general consensus, do you think?
I don't know. My theory about Argo was that when the critical community retreated from their support of Zero Dark Thirty, Argo became the quasi-political film that took its place.
You see, I thought it had to do with the fact that people were sort of making it up to Ben Affleck because he should have been nominated for Best Director.
Yeah, it's funny though, isn't it? We've seen that a bit. I remember when Driving Miss Daisy. This is going back a bit, but I remember when it won the Best Picture Award. I think it swept, right? I think Morgan Freeman got a whole bunch of awards, but the director Bruce Beresford was not even nominated. And then when it took Best Picture Award, I can't remember who said this, but they went on stage and they said, you know, we're really pleased to accept this award on behalf of a movie that apparently directed itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's not untypical. And of course that brings us to Dallas Buyers Club too, right? Jean-Marc Vallée has not been nominated as Best Director. But I think Craig has something to say about that.
Yeah, he's a Canadian, isn't he, Craig?
Yes, he's from Quebec. There were a number of Canadian snubs this year, including Gabriel, a Quebec film, which was Canada's entry for the Best Foreign Language Film, as well as Sarah Pauley's documentary Stories We Tell, which a lot of people were expecting to get nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a previous nomination for her film Away From Her.
That's the Alzheimer's one, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think when we talk about snubs, as you just have about the Canadian snubs, do you think these things are done on purpose, or is it just that other stuff gets more votes?
It's hard to say. I don't know if it's necessarily done on purpose, but I know, like for instance, in the best directing category, the competition was very fierce. So. I don't know, Adrian.
I want to believe that it's done on purpose, just because that pleases me in some way. but I don't think it. I think it's kind of accidental. Until you look at something like Inside Llewyn Davis, that to me is bizarre. Inside Llewyn Davis has just been shut out completely, except for what, Best Cinematography, right?
It's also shut out of the Golden Globes.
Yeah. What gives? You know, Oscar Isaac's performance in that film was extraordinary. a truly, truly extraordinary. Not just because he inhabited the character so well, but because he also sings. I mean, he's a song and dance man in that film, and he's completely convincing in that role. I'm looking at the, well, I guess it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough in the best actor category, but I was shocked that he wasn't in there. I was shocked that he was, you know, Captain Phillips over Inside Llewyn Davis. Who are we kidding?
Yeah.
That's nuts. I mean, Philomena is a nice movie, but again, Oscar, I think Oscar, Inside Llewyn Davis is a greater achievement. But, you know, the Coens had their year. So, again, in my mind, I want to think, you know, there's someone pulling a lever going, the Coens had their year. This is not the year for the Coens, and we got to, you know, kick them to the curb again. But no, it doesn't really work like that. And I don't know why. I don't know how it works or why that would happen, why you have this phenomenon where a film as strong as that is ignored. But it's strange.
Did you find that there's a lot of that, though, that if it's someone's year, they'll get the Oscar? I mean, the year that Cate Blanchett won for The Aviator, people assume that she got the award because she was snubbed for the Elizabeth movies.
Again, you know, it's one of those things that swings either way. I mean, what you're really asking about, I think, is Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
And the McConaissance, as they call it. Craig and I were talking about this yesterday, and we wondered if maybe he's a little too good. Like, there's too much McConaughey out there at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem that this is his year because of the TV show.
The TV show?
Mud was a big hit, and then Dallas Buyers Club. Craig, do you think that he's the lock for Best Actor?
I actually think so. I mean, the closest competition he has, I think, would be Chiwetel Ejiofor for 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
Matthews was sort of the more showy of the two performances, which may give him an edge. The other thing is, going back to Dallas Buyers Club, in terms of content, we've seen in the past that movies with LGBT content has been rewarded with wins, going back to Philadelphia, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, all the way to, like, Capote, Boys Don't Cry, Milk. So that's why I think Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto are probably the most likely to win in their categories.
Yeah, as I said, I saw Dallas Buyers Club this week, and Jared Leto, I mean, just, I think, was remarkable on screen, wasn't he?
I think he's ahead of all the competition.
Yeah.
The closest would be maybe Michael Fassbender in 12 Years a Slave, but I personally found his performance a bit too showy, a bit too demonstrative compared to Jared Leto.
I'd like to stand up for Jonah Hill as Best Actor. Best Actor in a supporting role. I don't think he's going to win, but that was really a magnificent performance.
Yeah, that was. Yeah,
and very courageous, and you know. He's got his penis out at one point.
What I remember the most was the bleached teeth.
That's right.
You know,
the bleached teeth. But his total commitment to that slightly crazy edge.
Yeah.
I was watching it thinking, I don't think I've ever seen a performance quite like this before. He's really he's kind of inventing a new character here. On that note, I should also, because we've been talking about Matthew McConaughey, on top of everything else he achieved this year, the first 10 minutes of Wolf of Wall Street are the best 10 minutes. I'm not the first person to say this. They're the best 10 minutes because of Matthew McConaughey. He's, once again, it's very showy, but just outrageously good. He's just so, I don't know what happened. He just has become such a magnetic force.
Yeah.
My wife puts it perfectly. She said he's behind the beat, and it's got a lot to do with that. He's a man who is behind the beat.
Yeah. Adrian mentioned Inside Llewyn Davis as a snub. What did you think should have been nominated that wasn't?
Well, it was just mostly the Canadian snubs I was talking about earlier,
yeah.
Which seem a little bit curious. I can't quite explain it. And several critics pointed out the fact that Gabrielle, the Quebec film about a woman with special needs struggling to live independently, that didn't get into the best foreign language film category.
Yeah. What about like the Butler? I mean, I remember when that came out, people were saying that that was going to be, you know, that was automatic Oscar bait. Did that surprise you that it wasn't nominated?
Yeah, there were quite a number of ones that didn't make it. I just really can't.
Like the Robert Redford one.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think I wasn't surprised that the Butler wasn't nominated because it was rubbish. But yeah, the Redford movie had a lot going for it. This is the thing, isn't it? There are actually hundreds of movies that were released last year that should have been recognized in some way. Most of them didn't make the cut because they were low budget, or they were independent, or they were not, you know, they went out on or they were released on VOD. I mean, they didn't hit enough theaters. I can think of three off the top of my head. The three best movies I saw last year, Oscar's not even sniffing at them. And they played in repertory theaters. They played, you know, they didn't play in your multiplexes.
What were they?
The three movies? Yeah. One, Computer Chess, blew my mind. There's a movie, it's actually opening in Vancouver next week, called Cheap Thrills, which would have qualified for the Oscars this year. Made for less than $500,000 down in L.A. It's a thriller/horror film, and it's a brutal film, but it's absolutely brilliant. The other one that comes to mind is A Field in England, although I guess that wouldn't qualify because it was a UK production. But it should have qualified for the best foreign film, and it's not in there. But it's just a phenomenal piece of filmmaking. It's like nothing else you've ever seen, you know, and smart, really, really smart. But all those three films that I just named were quite edgy and quite, you know, they're not mainstream films. So, and Oscar doesn't care about that, I think. But you know, and that's kind of the point of it, isn't it? We're celebrating Hollywood and a certain kind of convention, and a certain kind of conventional filmmaking. I mean, even Gravity falls into that category. It's not intellectually challenging in any way, but it's a magnificent achievement, and it makes Hollywood look very good at what they do.
Yeah, you guys have seen the thing that was on Facebook and Twitter earlier this week, some sort of graphic of who makes up the Academy, and I think the statistics were those predominantly male and predominantly white. The choices that the Academy makes, I mean, is that representative of who they are, do you think?
Yeah. I think so. I think in as much as most things are representative of, you know, the dominance of white men, it's just sort of a cultural given, unfortunately, I think.
Yeah. And Craig, when you were talking earlier about the content in Dallas Buyers Club and 12 Years a Slave, I guess because of who the Academy is, essentially, that's why they would probably stay away from that sort of stuff?
No, not necessarily stay away. Because, like as I was mentioning before, a lot of that, LGBT content has proven to be good for Oscar wins. I guess with 12 Years a Slave, there was a lot of graphic violence and the severe injustice of it makes it a really emotionally wrenching and I guess visually difficult movie to watch for some viewers, so that can potentially work against it. But it is an important film, so that, I don't know, there are a number of conflicting factors within that film in terms of Oscar politics, how it could play out. And it did win the best film at the Golden Globes.
Yeah. Now, Craig, do you think that of the acting Oscars, the woman that's in it that's nominated for Best Supporting Actress, Lupita Nyong'o, is she the lock for Supporting Actress?
I would say Jennifer Lawrence is the lock because
really?
She's swept all the precursor awards. All the critics are raving about her. Lupita does. She probably stands the strongest chance against her, but I just think Jennifer seems to have. The most
mojo.
I mean, it was a good performance, but I kind of thought that from what I've heard of 12 Years a Slave, that Nyong'o's performance was the better one.
Yeah, if I had a chance to pick, I would choose Lupita. It's far more nuanced, and it's a very emotionally devastating performance. Jennifer's is very showy. It's but I wasn't particularly taken with it.
Yeah. Now, it takes us to Best Actress. Kate Blanchett, is she the luck, do you think, Craig?
Definitely, yeah. Seems to be her year. She has swept all the other awards. I guess the one who might have a chance to beat her would be Amy Adams. She's the only one out of that batch of nominees that hasn't won an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
She did win the Golden Globes, but that was because the categories were separated into musical and comedy.
And drama.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I do think Kate will win.
Is the Woody Allen factor going to work against her?
Yeah, see, that's what I was wondering. All this stuff, to be cynical for a sec, not take away from Dylan Farrow and her letter, but some people online suggested that this was a concerted effort to hurt Woody Allen's chances at the Oscars.
Yeah.
It's out there now, so, let's answer the question. It obviously hasn't hurt Kate Blanchett's chances, at least.
It's hard to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah, how do you think people will react to the next Woody Allen movie whenever that comes out later this year, after everything that's happened in the last several weeks?
I think there will be a small commotion, and I think it will do about as well as most Woody Allen films do.
Yeah.
I don't, right or wrong, I don't personally see this impacting his career.
I guess what this recent episode has done, though, is sort of, if you're a Woody Allen fan, it's made you a fan, or kept you a fan, and then if you didn't like Woody Allen to begin with, it sort of reinforced that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're totally right.
Yeah. Do you think, Craig, having more than five nominees for Best Picture is a good thing?
Well, I think it's more an audience marketing thing to try and to get more people involved. Like, that's the only reason. So that there's a wider range. And I also feel that, like we were talking about this earlier, that it sort of helped other films that wouldn't normally be nominated to get nominations, and because of that, there's been an increasing number of science fiction films that have been included, like Avatar, District 9, Inception, which brings in, I think, more fans into the Oscar competition, watching the Oscar competition.
Yeah, if there were five films, I don't think Philomena would have been nominated for Best Picture, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's true.
Film critics, both of you are at the Georgia Strait. Do you guys spend a lot of time like this talking about what you've seen and the sort and the business end of it and how much a movie's grossed over the weekend and stuff like that?
I don't think we talk about grosses very much, but we definitely shoot the breeze about film a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, you kind of can't help it. And typically, Craig and I disagree about everything.
It's part of our job.
Yeah. Why do you think that is, Craig?
We have very different personalities. We have different backgrounds in terms of where we're coming from. So I don't know. I think we constantly talk about also how our views differ from other critics as well, and
that's true. I don't think either of us are typical, to be honest. Craig's just giving me a big smile.
Yeah. So you guys, Craig was the movie's editor at one point, and you are now Adrian.
Yeah.
In terms of when you solicit reviews, I guess when you assign them to critics. Do they have? You two have differing tastes in film, but because when we see cut lines on movie posters and the sort, and it has like the New York Times or the Georgia Strait or something,
yeah.
One assumes that everyone from that outlet speaks from a certain voice. Do you pay attention to things like that? I mean, the
you mean, do I pay attention to the way that
yeah, like
institutionally we might support a movie?
Or yeah, the kinds of movies that you all will like.
It's that's a very interesting thing, actually, because our critics are so diverse in their tastes, and the I should clarify here that actually Ken Eisner, who is our chief critic and who has been writing for the Georgia Strait for 25 years and for 26 years and has been in every issue of the Georgia Strait for 26 years, which is remarkable to me.
Wow.
He actually is responsible for assigning the reviews. And we'll talk about it once in a while. He'll say, well, who do you think? And he's very clever about it. He likes to match the right reviewer with the right film. In some cases, because the film deserves, to be savaged. the thing is, one, speaking as the editor speaking as an editor with very, very strong opinions and very, very well-defined tastes of my own, I'm frequently, bothered isn't the right word, but and if a movie that I don't like that we will give a good review to, it hurts just a little bit. It hurts just a little bit. And I kind of have to live with that. But I think also the Georgia Strait readers know our critics and sort of have an idea of what they're going to think. They have a sense of Ken Eisner would be a great example again. People kind of know where Ken's coming from after all these years.
Yeah.
And it's something worth remembering is that, if you're an engaged reader, it's okay to disagree with the critic. It's just, it's entirely subjective, and it's just, one goofy guy and his opinion, right? That would be my long-winded and possibly very confusing answer to your question.
Craig, the telecast on Sunday night, it's hosted by Ellen DeGeneres. She seems like a pretty safe host, right? She's not going to be like a Seth MacFarlane or a Jon Stewart and start savaging the audience, right?
Yeah, no, I think she's a great choice. I've enjoyed her in the past. She seems well-suited to the Oscars compared to some of the other choices. And I guess the Oscars have always sort of faltered when they've aimed to go extremely young. James Franco and
Hathaway,
of course. needless to say. So I think Ellen is very... she's a solid choice. And her humor has a broad appeal. So.
And apparently, like last year, we're going to see a lot of musical numbers. Is that right?
Is that right?
Well,
I think you might have better intel on that than we do, to be honest.
Well, I've heard that they're paying tribute to the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
And all of Judy Garland's children will be on stage.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I read that on Deadline, so...
I would. That's lovely. So 75 years of the Wizard of Oz, why not?
Yeah.
I hope that... here's the thing. It's not really relevant, but Judy Garland, she was a genius. She's a damn genius. I don't know if you've seen Judy Garland live at Carnegie Hall, but my God, could that woman sing.
Yeah, exactly. well, apparently Bette Midler is doing the tribute.
I read that
on Deadline, so I don't know how reliable that is.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's gay content.
Yeah. We need more Midler out there.
Yeah.
Midler's great.
So the Jesus movie, that opens this weekend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the number one film, right?
Is it? I guess so. they kind of messed up. I did a blog post about this because, as you probably know, they cut the Obama Satan out of the Jesus movie.
Yeah.
Well, I think that they're no longer playing to their base, which is the Obama hating red states and the Tea Partiers and the fundies and those people hate the Kenyan Muslim secret socialist president. They should have kept him in the film. But I can promise you there is a very amusing review of that film in next week's Georgia Strait, which was written by Kim Linnikin. And there was some debate about whether or not we would review this movie, because it's not really a movie. It's a truncated miniseries. It's been cut down to 2 hours. But our thinking was, A, it's playing in the theaters, so therefore we should review. We cover everything that plays in the theater for 4 days or more.
Uh-huh.
And I think people really want to know what we think of that film. If I wasn't here, I'd want to know what the Georgia Strait thinks about the Son of God.
Yeah. But by the way, just you'll indulge me for a sec here, since I've got both of you on here. Craig, do you are you? I mean, when you go review these movies, are you there at 10 a.m.?
Oh, actually, I'm not a movie reviewer. I write about the films, and I do write occasional web reviews, but I'm not an official movie reviewer.
Okay, but you have been to those 10 o'clock screenings, right?
Once in a blue moon.
Yeah. I mean, is that the ideal way to see a movie, do you think?
it is a great way to, so you can watch it without distraction and on the big screen, so you can get the movie experience. I actually do enjoy watching it with an audience because sometimes I like to watch how the audience reacts to the film. And sometimes, like for instance, for foreign films, it can be particularly helpful when there's an audience who understands the culture and the language and picks up on nuances that I may not be familiar with. Not necessarily for reviewing, but for understanding the film, I think.
But you'll appreciate that the audience at the Fifth Avenue will be a lot different than say the one at Bridgeport.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And like audiences at the Vancouver International Film Festival, it's quite a different audience from. You know, from like Scotiabank, Vancouver.
Yeah. Are you there most of the time at 10 a.m., Adrian?
Yeah, when I review films, I'm there at 10 a.m. Or if I'm going to write a feature about it, I go to the critic screenings. Yes, and there, you know, you're richer and poorer for it. It's good to hang out with other critics and bounce ideas around. But for instance, if you're seeing a comedy and there's only one or two other people in that room with you, it really works against your appreciation of the film.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I said, you're richer and poorer. It sort of depends on the movie. But it's nice to get out of the office. And they always provide coffee, and that's pretty good.
Yeah. You're both great to do this. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure having both of you on.
Thank you very much.
It's been fun.
Craig Takuchi and Adrian Mack of the Georgia Strait joined me from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.